This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're tuned in to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me this morning is Robert Fu, Managing Director of MyFP Services, which is the only licensed fee-only financial planner in Malaysia. Good morning, Robert, and welcome back to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, Robert, we are just a couple of weeks away from the tabling of Budget 2019. Already, we're hearing comments from the finance minister and also the prime minister about how the spending for next year, the public spending, might not be as, shall we say, robust as prior years, right? Keeping that spending in check. So for today's episode, I wanted to focus on perhaps some lessons that we can derive from what we have heard already from the finance minister and the prime minister. Now, what are some of your key takeaways here, and how can we distill it down to our personal spending habits?
I think our finance minister, Lim Guan Eng, has done is actually good in the sense that he basically, whenever you actually look at any finances of any individual or even company or I suppose even country, one of the first things you should do is that when you look at it, you have to make sure that if there's a huge amount of bleeding, you got to stop the bleeding first before you think about all the other programs or projects that you want to do, okay,
right,
to try and benefit your own yourself, your family, or perhaps in this case, you know, the riot in Malaysia. So I think he's done a lot of great things in terms of ensuring that a lot of the unnecessary bleeding, okay, is being curtailed and stopped. So that's actually a good thing. And he still, I think from what I read, he still says, hey, some of the things that which is productive for the country or in our case for your family that is good for your family should continue. Mm. But unfortunately, a lot of people, when they actually make decisions, financial decisions, they make very knee-jerk decisions based on what friends tell them or their uncles tell them or stuff like that.
Or what they read online.
Or what they read online, yeah, or based on the first guy who calls them during their birthday or something like that. So I don't think that is the right way actually to make decisions when you talk about finances, making financial decisions for your family.
Mm. Now, let's make that distinction there. When you say bleeding, what does that mean? Does it mean wasteful spending on our part? Help us define what bleeding means in terms of personal finances.
Yeah, so
give us examples.
Yeah, so when you talk about personal finance, I think one of the important things when we discuss with our client, the first thing is basically your cash flow. To make sure your cash flow is not what we call as negative. Because the moment your cash flow is negative, all other things is irrelevant. Mm. Okay, so you got to make sure your cash flow is positive at least. And how do you make sure your cash flow is positive? Basically, to make sure the outgoing, the expenses, the consumption, all that is basically controlled. It is necessary. It is optimum. And you got to make sure that at least the income that is where you're generating, the income that you're making, is consistent, is sustainable. Okay, so those are the things we have to look at. I mean, it is not surprising that for many people nowadays, they get their VSS and they get retrenched and stuff like that. So if you're going to plan for yourself and your family for like 10, 20 years from now, you're going to make sure that the income that you're having is sustainable. Mm. Okay, and it's growing in the rate that is helpful for you. If it's not growing, that is also a problem. Mm. So cash flow.
So we'll talk more about the income side in just a bit. But coming back to the spending, look, here on Ringgit and Sense, we have been trying to make this call towards millennials, right? Because there has to be an elevated level of financial literacy among Malaysians. A common theme that we hear among millennials is FOMO. Have you heard of FOMO? No?
Not exactly.
Fear of missing out.
Okay.
FOMO, right? Yeah, fear of missing out. Yeah. So that's the thing, right? On one hand, we hear this message very often, right? Keep that spending in check. But at the same time, there are just so many temptations that are out there, right? And then at the same time, we risk missing out on perhaps experiences or things that may bring us joy. So how do you find a balance there?
So I think the thing is that, I mean, the idea of trying to like manage your cash flow does not mean that you become a hermit and stay at home and don't do anything. I mean, that's not actually advisable, you know. I think, yeah, I mean, if you look at how the market works in terms of people want to sell you stuff, and they sort of capitalize on this thing of what you call as FOMO, FOMO. Fear of missing out. So they say, hey, if you miss it out, you're gonna... So that's what you do. Like even the car salesman will tell you, hey, you better buy it now because probably next month the price is going to increase. All these are fear that is instilled on people so that they make certain decisions which may not be optimum for themselves and the family. So the whole idea is basically when you talk about planning is actually to rationalize and say, look, which are the priorities, which is important, which can I do? And not to say that you should miss out anything, but you try to make sure you manage it, okay? Rather than just based on from an emotional decision point, you just do whatever, you buy the 3,500 phone or what's kind of thing. That you find that suddenly you find that you have a problem, and that's where things gets ugly, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. But here's the thing, right, Robert? It's so much easier said than done, right?
It is.
So what are some helpful tips that you have shared with your clients that perhaps you can share with us today when it comes to, like you said, keeping your emotions in check so that you make sure that your spending is also sustainable?
Yeah. So when you talk about planning, you're talking about time period, right? I mean, you're not talking about, hey, I want to make sure I'm going to spend all my money within the next 1 month or whatever. That is a very silly way of doing it. It's a foolish way. So when you talk about timing, you're talking about a timing of 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. So you do not need to miss out a certain thing when you can plan it. Maybe I can do that 5 years from now. So in the meantime, what do I do? When you look at cash flow and stuff like that, you basically look at two components. One is where do you derive your income? Okay, and how much income can you derive? And how can you actually improve the income that you drive, that you're earning? We have always been an advocate for multiple sources of income, because in this current world, you can't just work in one company and expect that everything will be fine and dandy all the way through, because suddenly your boss will say, hey, I can't really afford you now. I got to retrench you. So those kind of things are happening. I mean, we got clients in oil and gas. We got clients in... they face this problem now. Okay, so you got to make sure that your income source can be actually at least in two legs or three legs, double incomes or whatever. So that is important. So then you say, oh, that's easy to say. I'm already working so hard kind of thing. Unfortunately, that's the choice you have. You got to find ways to actually earn second income or third income if you can't, to sort of diversify your base. Yeah.
Right. To recap what you have shared with us so far, firstly, make sure the bleeding stops.
Yep.
And then secondly, make sure you try to boost your income as much as possible,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's obviously more than just walking up to the boss and saying, hey, you should give me more money, right? There are other ways we can boost that income. You alluded to some earlier. Talk us through some active steps. Upskilling, like getting more education.
Definitely. I mean, if this reminds me of a story, a very very funny story when I was in a bank, where at that time my GM was talking to some of these clerks who were actually they were typists and things like that. So every year they keep on asking, so we must have a higher salary kind of thing. So he says some of these people think that, just because they type at 30 words per minute, and one fine day when they reach 60 words per minute, they become the GM of the bank. So it doesn't work that way. So you basically need to upskill and do other things, learn other skills, think that maybe if you're in a profession, you want to do some consultancy work, So those kind of things you can do. So how do you do that? Or you may want to, if you're a very experienced manager or GM, you may want to look at business consultancy as a profession, something that you can do on the side that actually works in concert with actually what you're doing now. So these are things you can do. So you need to basically make sure that you have a good chance of having different sources of income. It is very important in this day and age, you must have multiple sources of income if you can. Now, that also involves, hey, I want to buy properties. I want to make sure my investments give me a return. Lots of times people buy properties and they just sit down there and hope, They don't even actually calculate to say, hey, is the property really giving me a return? And I can tell you by experience, some of my clients, when they buy multiple properties, there will be always one or two properties that are not making it. But they will hold it for years. So that is actually... inaction there basically means that you are not optimizing your situation.
Right. So diversifying income streams, meaning it's active and passive income, right?
Yep.
Okay. What about the gig economy? Are you a proponent of that?
Yeah, why not? I mean, any economy that's legal I'll be proponent for that. You know, whether you want to be involved in some online selling of clothing or whatever kind of, which, you know. So you can do that. And I did say something about during one of the interviews that, hey, you know, some people actually like cars and they have some of these car parts for old parts. You can actually sell it on Amazon, or you can sell it on
some of these online sites.
eBay and stuff like that. So you can do that. So that's actually another way for you actually to earn an income.
Mm. Yeah. We have had guests on the program here before who actually are asking us to shy away from the gig economy. Why? Because it's not sustainable. Rather, they say that the effort and time should be focused on building up your core skill sets and then monetizing that. Do you have a bias one way or the other?
I don't think so. I mean, when you talk about the gig economy, it's such a wide, you know, area. So you can't say that all the economy, the whole perspective to the gig economy should be like this or like that. I don't think that's the right way, because different people operate in very different ways. So I wouldn't say that I have a bias to say, oh, forget about the gig economy. No, that is not the way to do it. You got to look at what you're doing. Yeah.
Right. I am speaking to Robert Fu, Managing Director of MyFP Services. Now, in just a bit, we'll dive deeper into some personal investment strategies. So stay tuned right here to Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thanks for staying with us here on Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Tan Chung Han, and still with me in the studio is Robert Fu, Managing Director with MyFP Services, which is the only licensed fee-only financial planner here in Malaysia. Now, Robert, in the first half, you gave us some tips based off comments from the Finance Minister and the Prime Minister in the lead-up to Budget 2019, right, and how we can distill that down to the personal finance level. You said, one, stop the bleeding, and secondly, try to boost your income, right, which is what the government is trying to do as well. Now, let's talk about the broader investment strategy then. What are some common pitfalls that you have encountered with your clients?
I think for Malaysia, I think many clients are not really very exposed to investments.
Mm.
Okay, of course, in Malaysia, unfortunately, we have some limitations in terms of you only have access to what is available locally, you know. But of course, some people can actually invest offshore and all that. Actually, that is actually what I would prefer the clients to do, because then you will get a better diversification rather than just placing all your money in Malaysia. Not to say we don't live in Malaysia, but if you look at the capitalization of the whole Malaysian equity market, it's probably about 2% of the entire world. So why would you want to just like so-called fish from a small pond? Okay, so you should actually expand your horizons and see what are the other opportunities you have, so you can diversify better, different countries, different currencies and stuff like that. So that, I would say, is the wise move to do.
Yeah, but when it comes to that kind of diversification strategy, then you take on more risks as well, right? For example, the lack of familiarity with companies or stocks or the economy that you're investing in. And then secondly, forex risks as well. So how do you overcome that gap in knowledge then?
Yeah, so when you actually do diversification, you know, let's say different countries and stuff like that, you basically shouldn't go into the nitty-gritty, say, I want to buy this counter, I want to buy Apple, I want to buy Alphabet, I want to buy AIA or whatever kind of thing. That is actually taking too much of a risk. So what we normally encourage people is that you look at the whole index, maybe go to ETFs and stuff like that. You're basically spreading out your risk, okay? And it's much cheaper than active funds anyway. So why would you want to, you know, stick to buying counters? That is not the wise move. Yeah. Mm.
So what about the question of timing then? When to enter the markets? Should those listening right now try and time the markets?
I think timing the market has been shown by research that, you know, when you try and time the market, you actually get a much lower return than when you actually follow the index.
Mm.
And this is actually a research thing. So we don't time the market. What we say is that when you need to invest it as early as you can, so you have enough time to actually sort of weather the market.
Mm.
And most important is make sure you're properly diversified.
Properly diversified and also consistent,
yep.
Right? Stick to the plan.
Yep.
So that's going in. What about coming out of the market then? Is there such a thing as a good time to exit the market?
The time of exiting the market, it depends on the requirement of the client or the family, when he needs the money, stuff like that, for educating his children or to make sure that, you know, he has enough money to go for trips in retirement and whatever, funding his parents, whatever. So these are, the timing is based on your requirement. So when you look at it, when we've planned for a family or the client, we are basically planning for one life, the whole life. So obviously, we basically tell a client we don't have to plan for five lives because you only have one. Mm-hmm. So we have to plan for that whole life. But then the question is, when do you withdraw? That depends on your needs. Mm. So we have to basically balance it to make sure that your investments are there and you can actually weather the storm as best as you can. And then you can actually withdraw it at the right time that you want. Mm.
Now, Robert, that's a great overview that you've given us so far here. But I also want to get your thoughts on some recent data coming out of Khazanah Research Institute. They paint a pretty dire picture there for Malaysia. And the data shows that for households earning 2,000 ringgit a month, at the end of the day, they only have 76 ringgit per month to spare, right? So I wonder if this message that we've been discussing so far on this episode, if it's only targeted to a select few, or are there tips or strategies for those who are perhaps less well off that they can perhaps employ to either boost their income or, you know, try to invest even?
Yeah, I think when you talk about so-called the B40 and the guys who actually earn much lower than, you know, the typical normal middle income Malaysians, I think you can try to get them to budget in various ways. And I don't think it's going to work. Okay, at the end of the day, you have to increase your income, you know, or your wealth or things like that. So you have to do that. You got to find ways to do that. Upskilling yourself, going to business, having a second income. You have to do that, because I was actually asked this by a reporter and I said, look, you can do whatever budgets you can, no point. At the end of the day, you have to increase your income.
But is it that simple though? Because I'm sure many of these folks are already working so hard, but you know they are frustrated by the lack of wage growth, at least on their part, right? So when it comes to us telling them, just boost your income, really, there's got to be a lot more nitty-gritty to
that.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I've never said that it should be simple. It's not really simple. I mean, whether you're going to be a Grab driver or, you know, basically sell, do some business at the side where it's, you know, be catering for food or something like that. This can be done if you really want to. Because if you're really in this kind of dire need, dire situation, you have to find all kinds of ways to do this. Mm. So I think in that sense, Malaysia is open enough to for you to actually do this, you know, start a gry or whatever kind of thing. These are things you can do. Mm. And many people I know do that.
Then what about on the downside then? Because I think we would be remiss if we just say that everything will be hunky-dory if you just struck out on your own. But it's not always the case. That's the reality, right?
Yeah. So I think in that sense, of course, this is one of the biggest costs in terms of families, when you talk about a family with children and all that, is actually education. Okay? The cost of education and also medical. So, of course, I heard the government is basically trying to look at some medical plan and stuff like that. I think we really need to find out exactly what that is, you know. Is it going to be a contribution plan or is it going to be a state basic blanket where it covers everybody? Personally, I believe that everybody in Malaysia, as a Malaysian, should be provided free basic healthcare, if you ask me, you know. Of course, that's a big discussion. So I think people at that kind of situation, they have no choice but to try and pull themselves up. Okay? Mm. Yes, in some countries it's going to be more difficult. In Malaysia, it can be very difficult, but you got no choice, you know. Mm. So you can't just hope the whole thing will change and the government will come up policy and everybody gets free money. Okay? And then I don't think that's fantasy, like you ask me. So I think it can be done. I've seen some people doing it, slowly coming up. Yep.
Right. And I believe what you just said there echoes what the Prime Minister himself has said as well, whereby Malaysians should no longer just rely on handouts or free money from the government. Instead, they should try and pick themselves up and try to raise their level of income and status in a society, right? Yep. With the little time that we have left, Robert, I also want to zoom out and talk about some things that are being discussed for Budget 2019. Again, we are just a couple of weeks away from the tabling of Budget 2019. So I want to get your thoughts on, say, the idea of capital gains tax or inheritance tax. Your thoughts on this, positive, negative?
I think if you look at, I remember reading, I think the Kazada survey or something like that, actually they say that the income disparity is bad, but the wealth disparity is even worse. Now, so what do you mean by wealth disparity? Basically, if you talk to many rich people, they have a lot of assets, but very little cash. Okay? But when you do transactions or like assets, like property and stuff like that, if you have an RPGT, frankly, to me, RPGT is not effective. You should actually have some sort of a smart capital gains tax, because a lot of people are gaining and growing their wealth through capital gains, right? So we are not taxing it at all. I mean, now we are trying to talk about taxing internet businesses and all that. Yeah, because, you know, how can you just leave that alone, right? Because that's income that's generated based on the environment that Malaysia is providing you. So the Malaysian government should be able to tax you. But then we've got to be smart about it. Like, do we follow the Australian way, you know, where capital gains are basically added into your income tax, or do you follow the British way? And the other thing is actually the issue of inheritance tax. It's not just capital gains tax. Frankly, I think, you know, it's very shameful, you know, when you have people who are billionaires, right, and they're not paying any capital gains tax.
Billionaires aside, the criticism of that is it could choke some of these nascent industries. So, for example, like the digital tax, the digital industry is still trying to gain a firm footing here in Malaysia. And also Bursa Malaysia, going back to the volume that you spoke about earlier, if you compare Bursa Malaysia versus regional peers, we are quite far behind. So right. Really, is taxing the way to go? Again, keeping in mind where we are in relation to our peers.
I think when you look at taxing, you're just looking at one side of the mirror, okay? There's the other side of the coin, so to speak, you know, because it is just one thing taxing. But I basically say that, hey, when you tax the public, you got to make sure that the money is basically spent to make sure the economy grows. I mean, rather than, I mean, it's a sensitive subject, but to go to spend $1 billion on unproductive areas, then I think that is not good, you know? So then I would say that whatever kind of tax, I think you shouldn't do it, right? But when you tax it and use the money actually to grow the economy, to make sure that our economy can grow and the people can benefit, then it's fine. But if you tax and don't and spend it on useless stuff like that, you know, then I think you've got a problem. I think at the end of the day, in order to actually look at how to have an effective, comprehensive tax, I think you cannot leave the capital gains tax out. You have to bring it in. But like I said, it must be a smart way of doing it. Yeah.
Well, we'll find out come November 2nd. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. That was Robert Fu, Managing Director with MyFP Services. I'm Tan Chung Han, and you've been listening to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news bulletin, and after that, Enterprise, right here on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.